This is Rhea.
And Nadia, and this is Just the Two of Us.
Where we talk about a range of topics, including life events, current events, spirituality, entertainment, family relationships, as well as answering listener questions and more.
Anxiety has been a part of your life for a long portion.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of anxiety is natural. A little bit.
Right.
We don't know. We have something big coming up. We don't know how it's going to turn out. We have a little bit of anxiety about it.
Right.
That's okay. That's normal. Mm-hmm. But when did it become a problem for you?
Looking back at it now, when it really affected my life, it reminds me of when it was my 16th birthday and I was going to go see Hamilton in person, and I remember my mom and I were coming back from a therapy session, and I had such huge anxiety, and I had a bad headache, and the anxiety was so bad that my mom even took me to the hospital because we really didn't know what was going on. I mean, I've dealt with anxiety before that a little bit, but it wasn't as strong as that moment. And I feel like at that moment, I felt such anxiety and I had like such a bad headache, and I thought I was dying. And I told my mom, I was like, Mom, I don't feel so good. I didn't know it was a bad anxiety attack. I didn't know what it was really at that time. And my mom took me to the hospital and they said everything was fine and there was nothing wrong. And then one of my neurofeedback specialist, she was like, yeah, you just had a bad anxiety attack. And then going on that trip on my 16th birthday, I had such really bad anxiety to go into the Hamilton show. I was like, Dad, I need to go outside. And he's like, if you go outside, you can't come back in. I was like, okay. So I was literally just sitting there full of anxiety trying to watch the show. But all I could think about was my anxiety. That's all I could think about. I was thinking about, I feel like I'm dying. What do I do? And I went to the restroom to try to collect myself. And ever since then, my anxiety has really taken a hold of me. I took Zoloft for it, and I think it kept somewhat of it at bay.
Mm-hmm.
But it was actually, I went off Zoloft right before the trip. And I think that part of that played a role in it, you know, because even though I didn't feel like it was doing anything, it might have been doing something. And I just didn't realize it until I went off it. And so that's what we came to the conclusion. But I never went back on it because it didn't really help me that much. And I went on a lot of different other medications to help in my anxiety. And so that's really how it kind of all began.
With medications, do you try other forms of therapy outside of medication?
I mean, I did neurofeedback for my anxiety. And I did some talk therapy. But there are points when, like, after a neurofeedback session, I was like, I feel great. I don't feel the anxiety. I don't feel the depression. Feeling such a weight of the world just lifted off my shoulders. I don't know how I can explain it, but it just did. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, those are the types of things I went through. And I didn't get on medication until I was, like, 18 for it.
So, for those of you listening who may not be familiar clinically with anxiety, because I'm always trying to provide some resources for the things that we're talking about, anxiety sometimes can be kind of over-classified, I guess, maybe. Sometimes people can just kind of throw anxiety around as...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that it's important to inform people that are listening about things like that, because we get a lot of bad information, usually from the internet, usually from word of mouth. And so anxiety, clinically, general anxiety, I would say what's most common anyway, in my opinion, but from the source that I'm going to put in the description from the National Library of Medicine, which is somewhere that I use pretty often when I want to give scholarly examples of something. General anxiety, a mental health disorder producing fear, worry, and a constant feeling of being overwhelmed. Just excessive worry, excessive angst, excessive nervousness is general anxiety. These can be normal. These, just because someone has anxiety on a general scale doesn't mean there's a deeper meaning. It doesn't mean that you need medication. It doesn't necessarily mean that you need these severe treatments. A lot of it can be kind of managed with either therapy, lifestyle changes, different things like that. This just this kind of basic common anxiety. However, there are different categories, so to say, that do need a little more attentiveness. And we can talk about that at a later time, but I just wanted to kind of give a little educated overview kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you are someone who is experiencing really any level of anxiety, it's always helpful to talk to a doctor, somebody in the medical field that you trust. Your general physician is usually a good starting point. Or if you don't feel like going to a doctor, a relative, somebody that you confide in, because some people have kind of nervousness when it comes to doctors.
Right.
And for some people, my fiance, he's had a bad experience. He tries to handle a lot of stuff kind of within himself, which I think a lot of us do. We don't want to go. We don't want to spend the copay. We don't want to bother the doctor with little things. But when it comes to mental health, it really is something that's important. So starting mm-hmm. on those basic scales can be really helpful. And then your general physician should be able to refer you to other places. Neurofeedback is really good. I don't think it's something that's as commonly acknowledged as it should be,
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. and everybody has their different preference. I prefer, right. as a professional, not to obtain a license to prescribe medication, because I would like to do things in a holistic manner without medication. However, it's not a bad thing to utilize medication in a safe and responsible way. But different people have different preferences. Different professionals have different preferences. And that's fine. That's right. why we have,
and I mean,
you know, that's why we have options.
Yeah. I mean, with me, and I can attest to that, because I used to be on a bunch of medication for my mm-hmm. mental health issues. I mean, it was crazy. I took a lot, especially at night, to help me go to sleep, for my insomnia, to help me with my depression. At one point, they had to prescribe like 3 medications just for me to sleep, because I wasn't sleeping.
Insomnia is a common side effect of medication. And then with my daughter, for example, she was once put on ADHD medicine. She couldn't sleep. Then they prescribed her sleep medicine. And at that point, mm-hmm. I weaned her off, because it was just like, okay, you know, and right. this is a child we're talking about. And so I just personally, like I said, not that medicine is a bad thing. It can be very effective when it's used in a safe manner, but there are professionals who will literally prescribe and prescribe and prescribe and
right.
not even try to refer you out, not try other avenues, just over-medicate. Mm-hmm. And that's just not something that interests me.
No, I mean, I totally agree, because like, even when I was in a mental health hospital, mm-hmm. and I was in there my 18th birthday, right when I turned 18 and my parents didn't have a say over it, they literally piled me up with medications. My parents visited me on my 18th birthday, they were just like, are they going to put you on medication? I was like, yeah, I think so. And they were just like, they weren't too happy about it. I didn't understand their hesitancy until now, after I finally got myself off all those meds, where I just felt like I was just a zombie. That's all I felt. I felt literally nothing for like a whole year, for a couple of years when I was on them. So, I mean, I just had to get off it. So I just, one day I said, screw it. I'm taking myself off these medications. And so far I'm surviving, and I'm on one medication now that I know I need. But besides that, I don't need to be on 20 medications for one problem. That's just not a solution. And that's why I felt like these doctors that I ran into, they just think Medicaid. That's all they just throw out, Medicaid. Here's a medicine that can fix that. Here's a medicine that can fix that. And they just pile up on top of each other. You know, you're trying to, they just solve them by your symptoms. So this will solve your anxiety. Now you have depression. Let's put you on something for depression.
And it's a problem. Overprescribing of medication has been a problem for a long time.
Right.
I know that, what pain medicine was it? They had the short series on. Was it oxycodone? Is that what it was? Oxycodone?
I think so. Something like that. I know what you're talking about, because I've seen it on Hulu, but I don't remember what it was.
Dope Sick.
Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. It was OxyContin, Purdue mm-hmm. Pharma. Okay. So the show Dope Sick, I loved that show so much, and I was so glad they put it out, because I mean I've seen it. I've seen the effects of opioid addiction within my own family. I've seen it in other places, and I was really glad that they put it out, because over medicating is such a problem. You have places that will literally just hand out whatever you want. And it's, I've never been that person. I've always had a weird relationship with medication, and it's a big issue, and it has been for a long time. And it's
another thing. Is oxycodone a type of painkiller?
Oxycodone is, yeah. It was OxyContin is what that particular one was about.
Okay.
And OxyContin is the brand name of oxycodone. Oxycodone is a generic name for it. It's a pain medication that is commonly overprescribed. And
so you want to hear a quick story about that with me?
Yeah.
So when I think I was 19 years old, I think I've told you this before too, actually, but I had a really bad bike accident, and it almost like broke my back. And so at first I thought I was able to bear the pain and just kind of wait till it gets better. But that severely failed when I couldn't get out of my bed without my ex-boyfriend's help. Yeah. So I went to the doctor, and they tried to prescribe me the same thing. And I told them no, because I didn't want to get back. I don't want to get addicted, you know? So they were like, I was like, can you give me something that's not as strong, or something that's light, and see how I can handle it? So they prescribed me some other non-addictive painkiller. I don't remember what it was, but I took one pill and I never went back to it again. Like, I was like, I can bear this pain. I also did chiropractor, which is non-invasive, nothing like that. And it literally helped my back better than just waiting it out. He was like, I don't know how you're standing right now. And I'm like, me either. So, I've had that experience with a doctor try to prescribe me such a strong painkiller. And I was just like, no, I'm not about to get on that bandwagon.
Yeah.
I didn't want to come addicted. I didn't want to deal with all that. So I just said, screw it at that point. So,
yeah, I have a relatively similar story, not about myself, but with me, I've always cut things in half. So in any event that I had a procedure or something like that, and they told me to take this pain medicine, I always cut it in half, specifically narcotic, because I hate that feeling of just being like out of it. I don't like it. I have too much going on that I need to pay attention to not be aware. And there's other ways of pain management, but both my oldest kids, when they got their wisdom teeth taken out, they were prescribed. I don't remember what they were prescribed, but it was a narcotic. And I think the first day I might have given them a half. Now, I kept up with their pain levels and things like that. I didn't let them just sit around in pain. But they also, because I try to teach them about as much things as I can. Mm-hmm. And even when they're little, I don't just constantly give Tylenol and ibuprofen for every little thing.
Right.
And so when they had their wisdom teeth pulled out, especially my oldest, he was affected more. He was in a lot more pain. I actually spent like 3 or 4 days in his room with him for the better part of the day, because he was in a lot of pain. He was nauseous and things like that. Coming down from the pain medicine he was on when he had the procedure, they completely had him out. It was like him, when getting him in the car and Jada in the car after their extractions, I cried a little bit, because I was like, God, my kids look half dead. This is a lot just for two extractions. Good Lord. That next day, I would only give them, I think they maybe took one dose of a half. And after that, we just did ibuprofen. And I'd ask them, I managed their pain levels and they were good. They were fine with just taking ibuprofen after that first day and doing ice and things like that. Because it is, I mean, they know my family's history of addiction. And so that's part of it too. They're like, nah, I don't want to be.
Right.
stuff. So right. Why start with payments? If right. they need ibuprofen or something like that, that's fine. But yeah, it's just not. And it's interesting that I kind of like the, I like where this conversation went with anxiety and medication and things like that, because I think that it's important to understand that, first of all, what anxiety is, when anxiety is something that you might need to seek medical attention for. And right. like I said, a little bit of anxiety is normal if you're mm-hmm. nervous about something. But if you can't sleep because you're so nervous, you can't sleep for days, it's making you sick, things like that, then it's important to get professional help.
Right.
But not, but also to understand that a little bit, if you have a test, you're a little nervous, that's normal. That's fine.
Right.
If something is going on with somebody and you're worrying about them a little bit, that's normal. That's fine. It's when you can't sleep, when you can't function, when you feel like you're in a lot of pain all the time, when you feel fatigued a lot, when you feel depressed, things like that. Those things are the things that you should look into help for anxiety.
And there's also, if it's also getting into your everyday life, because mm-hmm. I have a perfect example of what's going on recently, that anxiety has literally taken over my everyday life. Because so recently I've been having anxiety about eating food out. It's like, if I don't have my food here in my apartment while I'm watching a certain show, I'm afraid I'm going to die. I've had anxiety about eating, just eating. And it took such a big toll on me that I'm trying to use my other coping skills to help me with that anxiety. And I think that's important. I think it's important to know that if it's messing with your everyday life, that's when you should also seek help.
I agree. And food anxiety can be from a few different things.
Mm-hmm.
COVID for a lot of people had people really anxious to, you know, be out in public for a lot of reasons. And some people are still dealing with that. Restaurants and things like that, even going to the mm-hmm. grocery store to get food. That's some anxiety some people have. And then you also have anxiety over, if I eat this, I might gain weight. If I don't eat enough, I might lose weight. Body distortion kind of thing, but mm-hmm. in an extreme way, to where you either don't eat at all or you're overeating excessively because of the anxiety from eating. And
mm-hmm.
that's something real too, because I've done that myself. There's times I'm like, okay, I need to get my together and do better, and I find myself kind of eating more.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I have anxiety over the fact that I need to lose weight. And right. eating is my coping mechanism. And right. it makes no sense, and it makes so much sense. But it's like, right. well, if you want to lose weight, why are you eating more? Because I have anxiety. It's just a cycle. What for you do you think seems to be kind of the root of your anxiety with eating out in public or not having this specific routine?
I mean, I think part of it was COVID. I was so used to eating in my apartment for yeah. such a long period of time that when it came to eating out, I was just like, like, I don't want to eat out. Like, it had nothing to do with COVID itself, but just having everything shut down, I created a new routine, mm-hmm. new things to help me eat. And I was eating a lot too during COVID time. The anxiety didn't really start until things opened back up again. And I tried to go out to eat, but I was afraid that I'm going to die if I do that. And I think part of it has to do with the fear that people put on around going out about COVID uh-huh. and all this stuff. I wasn't afraid of getting sick. I was afraid yeah. that if I eat, I'm going to die. I don't know why, how my brain connected those things. I have no idea, but it created that thought in my brain. So now when I go out to eat with my parents, I'm afraid I'm going to die if I eat there. If I don't eat in my room, watching TV, and it has to also be a certain show too. That if I don't, it kind of like came more of like an OCD type thing, you know?
That's what I was thinking.
If I don't watch this show and eat while I'm watching this show, and if I don't have like a Coke with me, then I'm going to choke. That's mainly what it is. I'm going to choke and die. So yeah. it just kind of, I'm not quite sure what exactly started it all, but I don't think COVID helped. And I think what part of it has to do with that I was taking the medicine and it went down the wrong way and I almost choked on it. So I think that's where the main trigger was. Like,
that makes complete sense. Yeah, I mean, typically when people develop this kind of OCD feeling habit. It's because they've experienced some kind of trauma, no matter how big, no matter how little. And for you, this, to me, it may feel like a small scale trauma. To you, it probably feels like an extreme trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But when somebody experiences any scale of trauma, a lot of times it will create that kind of OCD feeling of a response, because I need to control the outcome of this situation so it doesn't happen like that again.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes complete sense to me, because the situation went in a traumatic way, and so now I have to do this every single time to make sure that doesn't happen again. I mean, in this situation, I wouldn't suggest this for just any, because if I say, okay, take this large scale trauma, reenact it, and show yourself that it doesn't go the same way, that could be completely different for somebody else. So I wouldn't recommend that on a general scale. I would recommend in this situation, because the outcome is definitely going to be different. Start on a small scale thing. Okay, I have to have this Coke. I have to watch this show. I have to eat this thing. Remove one of those small details from the equation. And then your mind is going to realize, okay, I don't have to have this ritual in order to change the outcome. It's okay. So if I start, I don't have the Coke. I have water or something else in its place. It's a small scale change to show yourself, okay, I can relax. I don't have to control the situation anymore with this ritual.
And the thing about it is, it's like, I've gotten a lot better at it though. Like where I am now, I couldn't imagine myself being in like a month ago, because I've been able to go to a restaurant with my parents and eat just a little bit, just to eat just, and a couple of weeks ago, I had a meal with my dad. And that was a huge step for me at a restaurant. Yeah. And I mean, I've gone through a lot of it. Do I still have it? Yes. But is it taking as much control as my life as it did a month ago? No. And one of my therapists, she literally says, she told me just to keep what I'm doing for now and until we assess it. And I'm just like, I can't wait that long. I feel like I can't survive or live life the way I want to with this. So literally what I did was, I was like, let's just start small. Like you said, maybe put on a different TV show to watch while I'm eating. Maybe have a iced tea or a water to drink with instead of a Coke. I'm slowly stepping out from it, but it's still taking me time to get rid of it.
So yeah, I have really, really bad panic attacks, and I never had this issue before between panic attacks and inability to sleep. Never had this issue before until during COVID. Most of the places I go, I don't wear a mask anymore. I try to be cautious in other ways. If there's a lot of people, I'll wear one, but I can't say that now at this point. I wear one everywhere I go. And I've never had anxiety from like being in a crowd. I've never been anxious from being around a lot of people. I'm a people person. I talk to a lot of people. That doesn't bother me. Never. And I wasn't like, we were cautious when COVID first was a thing, but it never scared me to go out. So I don't know what the association is there. I'll have one on a regular day. It'll happen 1 to 3 times a day. I don't have to be out. I could be at home. It doesn't matter. I try to keep a log of it. There's no pattern, nothing. But it started like 2 years ago. The first time I think I was in Walmart and there was just a lot of people. And it's ever since then, there's been times where I haven't had one for a while. And then I say for like the past year, it's typically 1 to 3 times a day. They can be small and they can be kind of paralyzing. It's kind of one of those things to where I try to take certain things out of the equation. I was like, all right, I'm not going to Walmart. That's the obvious solution. And at that time, that worked. In the beginning, if I didn't go in Walmart, I was fine. My fiance pretty much banned me from going to Walmart, because every single time I went in, I would have a panic attack. And at that point, we were hearing a lot of stuff on the news. It was just an overload of information. It's this new thing. And so it could have been that. But I've figured out certain things to do when I have them. It really is kind of this process of elimination thing. Some things can be triggering, certain places can be triggering, and then you have your routines. If you have routines so specific where if you don't do this routine, it will cause the anxiety, a lot of times it's not until we kind of prove to ourselves that the routine isn't what's controlling our outcome. Mm-hmm. Until we learn, okay, I can kind of breathe again. And I don't have to let it consume me. I can slowly figure it out over time. But kind of in the relation of medication and anxiety, holistic alternatives and things like that, therapy is always the place that I would start. And I used to be so ironically against therapy. And had you asked me about therapy when I thought about it 10 years ago, I would have laughed at your face and thought it, I literally told you it was the dumbest thing I've ever heard of because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I think maybe I have this kind of, well, had, because it wasn't until I was like, you know what? I want to learn more about this. I went to school for psychology and then for mental health. And obviously my whole perspective changed. So, and I recommend therapy to everybody now as a really good starting point, because most of the time we don't even know what our underlying issue is till we're talking to someone who doesn't know us, who doesn't make excuses for us, who is also not biased against us, and is going to be open-minded because they have a complete separate perspective. It's not until that situation that a lot of times we actually figure out what's actually going on.
Right.
Because we're looking at everything through our own mind, our own eyes.
Right.
When you step outside of the box, and again, not to say that medication doesn't help, because I know for a fact that there are certain things that medication is magnificent for. If you are someone who is trying to rule out, like in your instance, trying to scale down medication and focus on other healing techniques, you know, somebody like that, when you really start to dig into the issue, you start finding out other things about yourself. Sometimes you find out other triggers. Sometimes you find out other deeper rooted causes for issues. And you particularly, you've been through a lot of traumatic things and trying other alternatives like therapies, because some things we can get past, right? And even for myself, I know that there's something through conversations we've had that no matter how hard you try on your own, there's something that you cannot get past. And I can relate to that.
Right.
Because no matter how much you talk about certain things, we experience it and it's just there and we can't always get past it. And so certain medications are good for us to kind of gain our focus.
Right.
But there's other things we have to do to really get through the actual issue. Therapy, neurofeedback, things like that, you know. But I think that's really important.
And I mean, one thing that really caught my attention in what you were saying was the anxiety going to Walmart, right? Like I have that same anxiety every time I go into Costco. Every time I go into Costco, I have this overwhelming feel of anxiety. There was one time I even had to hold my mom's hand. A 21-year-old holding her mom's hand because she can't get through an anxiety attack.
Tay-Tay locks arms with me a lot. Most of the time if we go into a store, and I think it's just a comforting thing for her.
Right. It's like a comfort thing. For crowds. Yeah. Right. That was just, when you said that, I was like, yeah, I relate to that so much. You're right. It just feels like your whole body is in fight or flight when there's nothing going on that's wrong.
Well, there's something going on.
It up.
Yeah, there's something going on, but there's no immediate physical threat. But our brain still thinks that there's some kind of physical threat or emotional threat.
Right.
So what are some healthy coping mechanisms that you utilize when it comes to anxiety?
Well, I do this thing called inner balance. It's called heart math. It's pretty much this thing that you clip onto your ear and it tracks your breathing. There's an app on your phone and you got to follow the circle, breathe in and breathe out. And it kind of helps regulate your breathing and to kind of like calm yourself down. There's three levels, or no, there's technically four levels, but there's three colors that show up: red, blue, and green. You want to stay in the green as much as possible, but that takes a lot of like practice to get into the green. And it kind of just helps you with your breathing. Like if I'm having like an anxiety attack, sometimes I'll just grab that and I'll just do it. And you're so focused on trying to stay in the green that you're not thinking about what somebody said 5 years ago. You know, you're thinking about trying to get the same thing into the
and it gets
a little bit annoying, but you can also put music in the background to help you calm yourself. Okay. So that's what I do, is I put on Christian music in the background and I try to focus on God. You know, I try to focus on breathing in God, letting out the depression. Oh. And it really helps with just breathing and kind of teach yourself. I remember when I first started doing it, my right hand would get numb because it's not used to getting all that oxygen. And I, of course, that doesn't happen as much anymore because I do a lot more breathing now. But that's a really good coping mechanism that I use a lot. And then I also use the Alpha Stem, which I mentioned in other videos before.
Yeah.
And that's also been very helpful, you know, kind of like slow down your mind, slow down your body, just helps you calm down.
Okay. And so, for those of you that aren't familiar with that, I'll put some information about both of those in the description. When we do these, do you find them to be helpful to you? When we do these episodes and we talk about stuff like this, do you find it to be helpful to you in any way?
I find it to be helpful. And also, I really want to try to bring a lot of attention to all these mental health disorders and everything that I've gone through in my life. I feel like it can be very inspirational for people. And being like, oh, look, this person, she's been through it. She knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If she can get through it, then I can get through it.
Yeah.
And kind of show that, I mean, there's a lot of stigma around mental health we talked about. And I want to show people that it's okay. It may not feel like you're going to get through it, but I'm showing you right now that you can get through it.
Crush the stigmas.
Exactly. Exactly. I want to make sure people know it's okay to go to therapy. It's okay to cope the way you're coping, as long as it's not being self-destructive.
There has to be this balance to where we're not promoting the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. We're supporting the good stuff and finding a way to kind of focus on the good stuff while we try to make progress on the bad. Right. Don't condemn them for the bad stuff. Pay attention to the positive and work on ways to kind of do better on the bad. But sometimes you have to shift your focus to the good and worry about the bad, but not detrimental as you go forward. I appreciate you talking with me today. I appreciate you guys listening. And thank you, Natia, for being back with us. We always like it when you're here. You give us great insight and great experiences.
Always.
That's all for today. And we will talk at you guys next week.
Go to www.philology.net/connect. Shoot me an email with any questions you would like featured on future podcast episodes.
Thank you guys for being here. We will talk at you next week.